about debugging?
So what I'm going to specifically try to give you some information on today is how you can use some of the other tools outside of a network sniffer that are freely available from either Microsoft.com or on the download site that you can use to debug a problem that you might be seeing between your application and Windows when you're trying to interoperate. So I'm going to show you a couple different techniques for that. So for the background, so a lot of times most issues can be solved with just taking a network trap, a network sniff, and looking through. But sometimes, you know, there's a much deeper investigation that you need to do, and it requires just a different tool set. So there's a lot of things out there. There's resource kits. There's the sysinternals tool set if anybody's used them. There's a debugger called WinDBG that's freely available that's started out for use by a lot of the driver developers, but it's kind of grown to be used for both user mode and kernel mode debugging. And from a support perspective, a lot of times using those tool sets is what we'll start with to try and isolate and help you get the problem resolved. A common means is to use something called a postmortem memory dump, just basically take a snapshot of the process and just see what's going on. But now there's some tools that are, at least on the capture side, that we can use to help basically record whatever the actions are that you're doing and then go try and figure out what's going on. So WinDBG is the most common debugger. And Daryl, they get a copy of this presentation, is that right?
Just handed out.
Okay. Do they get a soft copy of it?
Following the event,
okay.
We did previously.
Okay. The reason I ask is, so in the presentation, there's a link to the Windows Hardware Developer site that has the WinDBG debugger, the latest available download. They're pretty regularly updating that debugger toolkit. It's got a really fairly rich feature set. They've done a really, in the past couple of years, they've done a lot of efforts to try and improve the quality of our public symbol servers. So no matter what level of hot fixing or patching the Windows system you have or that you're using, you'll probably be able to get public symbols for that, and they'll line up, they'll be correct, which is really important from the debugging side so that you what you see is the correct values. It's kind of the foundation for the next layer of technology that we're working with now, which is called IDNA tracing. I'm going to show you a capture using IDNA. Basically, it's a recorder that will record all of the system level calls for a process in user mode. We also have a kernel mode one, but that's a little bit further off for public availability. But so it'll record all the calls, and then I can go back after the fact and basically replay through that, set breakpoints, and then observe what values the process was passing back and forth between these calls without having to do a live debug in real time. So that's kind of what we're going to talk about. So from a support perspective, what we would do is if, say, you're looking at one of the RPC calls for the certificate service and the values just aren't coming back, you know, the request responses just aren't looking like what you thought they might, we would send you the recorder, you take a trace, you upload it to us, we'll give you a file transfer site. We'll do some analysis. We'll show you exactly what's going on. Okay. So.
So you're saying it's a week update.
Right now, yes. In the future, maybe they'll release that tool. Now for live debugging, you can do that yourself, and I'll show you how to do that. But for the take a snapshot and do an analysis, or record a sequence of events and do the analysis of that you would work with us. And as a protocol licensee, I mean, I don't believe there's any charge for that. You just, you know, send an email to our doc help alias and say, hey, I've got a problem with this. Can you help with me? And we'll put together an action plan and work with you on how to try and get that problem resolved. So that's basically what I was talking about is IDNA tracing. Records all the call execution for a process for a given time frame, meaning you just click start whenever you are, you know, from the command line, tell it to start, stop it. It creates a file that we'll then use to go and do the analysis with. And the real benefit of this is there's no need for a live debugging session, because most of the times trying to do that for the support team, you know, corporate policies won't allow that, firewalls won't allow that, the network won't allow it. It's just very difficult to try and get set up and do. And this just gives us an alternative means of doing that. ETW tracing. So with Windows 2008 and Vista and beyond, ETW is a heavily utilized logging mechanism. If you go into the event collector for Windows or the event viewer, you'll see you can start to collect an ETW trace. What they're doing is they're moving a lot of the logging and more detailed debugging into ETW tracing. You used to have something known as a checked build that you'd load up and have all the symbolic information inside of the DLLs. They don't do that anymore. Basically, ETW tracing is the replacement for that. And I'll show you an ETW trace from a KDC that just shows some of the information that allows you to do a little bit more investigation of what's going on. For a lot of the security stuff, you would take an ETW trace, and we'll have to decrypt it. The only reason is we don't ship they're called TMF files that have the symbolic information. We don't ship those yet, and we don't release those publicly. But we can share the analysis of that with you. So, this would be something that if you work with us on an issue related to the protocol documents, we'll give you the tools to collect it. We still have to do the analysis currently, but that's something, of course, we'd share the results with that and help you get past the problem that we're having. So Windows Resource Kit. So these tools are all publicly available on Microsoft.com. There's lots of different utilities, looking at file system ACLs, what the state of the OS is. I'm going to show you Process Explorer and Process Monitor, which will allow you to get a lot of information on how a process is configured and what it's doing and what its dependencies are. There's a support tools kit if you're working with Active Directory. There's utility called LDP, which is good for looking at the LDAP backing store in Active Directory and what values are set and trying to understand exactly what that schema is or what's in the schema for that installation. Kerbtray, if you're working with any Kerberos traffic, it'll allow you to actually see which Kerberos tickets have been issued and what the status of those tickets are. A lot of different ways for looking at what's going on in the operating system. So Process Monitor is a monitoring tool that there used to be a set of utilities called FileMon, RegMon, ProcMon, and DebugMon, whatever. There were a bunch of different utilities that, DebugMon would capture all the debug print statements that a process was calling. FileMon would show you all the file system access that's going on. So they've basically combined these tools to give you a little bit higher level view. And it's got a pretty flexible filter for going in and isolating the specific process that you want to take a look at. Process Explorer will give you some real-time monitoring stats, as well as a lot of different information about what the dependencies are for that process. So if you want to see what DLLs are in use, what name pipes are opened by that process, there's a lot of different information that you can get from it. So now, that's kind of the boring part of the presentation. So let's go through, actually see some demos on how you might use this. One of the ones that I want to show you is how you can use WinDBG in a case that's probably relevant to certificate work, is when you have these certificate service request, RPC request response, of course, there's RPC layer security there in play. So by using WinDBG, I can catch that call, I can set a breakpoint on that specific call that I'm looking at and use the protocol documents to understand exactly what was passed, because at that point, RPC has already decrypted that traffic. So I can see the unencrypted values on the Windows side, and then I can compare them with what I think I'm sending and what's going on. All right, so with that, so before we go into that one, I just wanted to show you a couple of the tools that, we'll start with ETW. So I got them right here. So this is kind of an example of what you might see from. So this is a client making a call to get a Kerberos ticket, and you'll see that this is on the KDC side. So you'll see some things like create a session, pack signature validation, and then you'll see, where is it? So it's going to go create a logon session, and then eventually down here you'll see that it actually terminates it. I forget what the reason was on this one. So you'll see it's actually not creating the logon session. I forget what the, but there's a return code that's in there. So just if you could take those values and actually go look at a lot of cases, you can go look at the protocol documentation and see why it's failing. So that's what ETW is. It's just standard debug logging. Yes?
So how does that turn that on?
So to do this, you would actually go into... go in to basically set us a subscription, and then go in and set the events, set the specific events that you want to collect. So it's inside of the event viewer.
That's different from the system event. That's
correct.
All different subsystems.
That's
just yep. Same
that's correct. That's correct. They're unifying the. So the question was how would you go about getting an ETW trace? So they're unifying the event collection. So there used to be a couple of ways to do it. There was the event logging, the standard Windows event logging that any user could see. But then there was also use of something called a check build, which had all the symbolic information and a more detailed level of logging. So but to do that, you would have to go load the check build of that binary and do whatever was required to get that enabled. It wasn't always just a straightforward just copy over the check build DLL. Well, this take alleviates the need for that. All release versions of the DLLs for the operating system have ETW built in. It's just a matter of knowing the right flags to enable or disable it. Does that answer your question? Does that answer your question? Okay. What we can do, just because I have a couple other demos and we don't have a lot of time left, maybe afterwards I can show you how to do that. So, or anybody that's interested. So the next couple utilities are the ones that I talked about from the resource kit. So Process Explorer and Process Monitor, and I'll show you what those. So this is Process Explorer. So it gives me all the running processes on my system. Their dependencies are who's interacting with them. So you'll see in this case, Groove Monitor has a pipe open with Explorer. R is a child process of Explorer. The other things I can do is go in and look at the properties of that. It'll show me what ports that process is using, if it has any. There we go. What privileges are set that process is executing under, what privileges it has, some information about the environment variables that it's in, that are using. I can look at all the strings that are in that DLL if I was interested in that. I can look at, there's a bunch of statistics on performance I can take a look at. What version it is, where it's located, how it was launched. So Process Explorer gives me a lot of information. If I wanted to find a process, I can use the little bullseye here. And find what process that is. So you can see I dragged it over the Vista taskbar at the bottom, and that's a child process of Explorer. So the second example is going to be Process Monitor, where now I want to, let's just take Notepad. Actually, here, let me remove this. So I'll set a filter to just look at file system access for Notepad. I'll go ahead and launch it. And you'll see I'll start to get events. So we'll go and open a file. You can see I can go look at process monitor and see all of the file system or registry access that's going on. And I can turn on different filters and look for different information. So this is, again, this is a tool that's just unifying a set of tools that were all separate tools in the past. So now what I wanted to go through is how I can use the debugger to basically look at, do some protocol analysis. So we'll start with a network monitor trace. So this is a capture of a Windows client logging into the domain. And what I'm specifically interested in this case is I'm going to look at all of the SAMR protocol calls. So I'm working with the SAMR documentation set, and I'm trying to isolate a specific call. So in this case, what's the section number? 5.11. So we're going to be looking at a SAMR lookup names and domain call. You guys see that? Okay. So in the network capture, we'll go ahead and apply our capture filter to find all of the packets that are related to SAMR. All right. You guys see this okay? So these are all the different SAMR calls that were captured in this trace. So the one that I'm looking at is lookup names and domain. So I can go look at this. I have a time travel trace that was taken at the same time. So I was recording that the LSA process, all the calls that it was making at the same time I took this netmon trace. So what I can do is look at the values that are here. I can look at the named entries. And I can see, let me see if I can make this a little bit bigger. Here's the function prototype that I'm interested in and what I'm going to look for in the debugger. So the first thing I want to do is go ahead and set a breakpoint. Or actually, excuse me, the first thing I'm going to do is go ahead and open up the debugger and set my symbol file path. So if you go to that WinDBG site, they have a public symbol server path that's set up. Here, I can show that to you. So this is where you can download the debugging tools from. And this getting started link at the very bottom has a path to the public symbol servers, which is this right here. As long as you got an internet connection, you can hit these and get the symbol files needed to look at what's going on inside of a process. So once I have my symbol file path set, I can go ahead and I'm going to use a command. The debugger, once you install the debugger, there's a detailed help file that goes with it. It has a list of all the commands, all the parameters, how to use them. It's pretty comprehensive with a lot of examples. So in this case, we're going to list the loaded modules for this process. So we'll go look at what's loaded and what, so we can start to take a look at this call and how to analyze it. So LM allows us to go in. So. And it gives me a list of all of the different modules that are in there. So the one that I'm looking for is SAM SRV. This is where all the SAM calls are. So now I'm going to go take a look at what the public interface for this DLL is. And I'm going to go find my lookup names and domain call. So I do that by using the command X, which is to examine symbols. You can see, here's my call. So this is the actual function pointer that this process would use to make that call. So I'm going to go ahead and set a breakpoint on it. And I do that by using the command BP. And then I would use the command go. So if I was doing a live debug, which is what you would be doing if you were trying to see the values going across the wire, you just click go. And we've now hit our breakpoint. So we use the command KB to look at the stack. So KB just gives me the first three arguments. So now I'd start to compare what's in the documentation with what I see in the debugger. So you can see I've got five parameters. I've got three in parameters and two out parameters. Okay. So if I go look in the debugger, I just did this command KB. Here's my lookup names and domain call. This is where I broke on. Here's my first three parameters that the debugger displays. So these are pointers or the values that I passed in. So this parameter here is a pointer to the domain handle. The second one's going to be the count. And the third one's going to be a pointer to the relative IDs, or excuse me, the names that I'm looking to get the relative ID. Because what this SAMR call does is takes a name and translates that to a relative ID. So anybody know the relative ID for administrator? It's a common RID. It's 500. So we're going to be looking at this call, and what I'm going to show you how to do is to find the return address for this function, set a breakpoint on that, and then I'll look at so now I have the parameters that I pass in. I'm going to look at the return values, and I can see what those return values are before they were encrypted back and sent back to me on the wire. And you can do this with public symbols. You don't need any Microsoft source code to do this. And the reason that's important is, just by knowing a little bit about CPU architecture and assembly language and just calling conventions, you can almost all the RPC interfaces are going to all be laid out in standard call calling convention. So by knowing that and just knowing where to look in memory and what the CPU architecture is, I can figure out what I'm passing in and passing out without having any source code at all. So I've got a stack trace. Let's look at what the current state of my registers are on the CPU. So what's important here is my instruction pointer, my stack pointer, and my base pointer. So if I go look at my stack pointer, or look at the memory range around that, here's the base pointer for this function call, which is right here. And so if I know how standard call calling convention works, I know that the first thing that happens is I pop that return address or push that return address onto the stack. But just prior to that are going to be my function arguments. Okay? And actually in this case it's here they are. Those five parameters that are passed in to this call, if I look at the stack, here they are. Because I'm using standard call calling convention, all the parameters get pushed onto the stack. And if I wanted to validate this and look at the assembly for this, I could go do that as well. I can do that by looking at the call that called this SAMR call. So here's the return address. So if I just did a little bit of unassembling of this DLL right prior to this return address, I would see how this call was set up. Okay? So let's do that. We do that with a command called UB, and I'm just going to paste in that return address. Here's my call to invoke that's going to make my call to SAMR. So if I look before that, and I'm not going to spend too much time on this, but I can see these different parameters being pushed onto the stack right before that call. Okay, so I can go evaluate where are these parameters that I need to look at to compare with the document. Okay. So what we're interested in is these five guys right here. So here's our domain handle pointer. Here's our count. Here's the name that we're going to go get translated into a RID, and here's our out values, okay? So let's take a look at this parameter right here. This is our names array. So we're just going to dump the raw memory, right? We don't really know anything about it, except I know that it is an array of Unicode strings. So how's a Unicode string laid out? There's a maximum length, there's a current length, and then there's a pointer to the actual buffer of the string, right? Okay? So I'm just going to dump this memory out. Here's my maximum length, here's my current length, and here's a pointer to the buffer. Okay, so these are Unicode characters. So I can see these 4 bytes, each 4 bytes of these, if I do this count 1A, what's that? That's a hex value. So if I want to find out how long this is, I just do question mark 1A, 26 bytes. Okay. Well, Unicode string is null terminated in this case, and I know that just because I'll explain that if you really wanted to know why. But 26 bytes. So this string is these guys. Right here. Okay. So here's my Unicode string. And actually the simpler way to do it is just DU, which is dump Unicode, and it'll actually figure out what that string's supposed to look like. Administrator. Okay. So I'm trying to do a lookup on the account administrator. Okay? So the next thing that I want to know from a protocol analysis perspective, because I don't care about the internals. All I care about is the input and output values. Okay? I don't want to know what your internals are. I don't need to know. Okay, if you really wanted to do a little more analysis, you could try and do some try and figure out all the different calls inside of this. But what I'm interested in here, back to my stack, is to take this function and unassemble it. So I'm going to use a command called us unassemble to the end, basically, is what it's going to do. It's going to unassemble this function. Okay. And what I'm interested in here is what happens right before I return out of this function. So you can see here's the assembly instruction for return. Well, you can see, since I know it's, again, that I'm in a standard calling convention, I know that right before I return, I'm going to restore the previous frame stack pointer. Okay, so I know that just because I know how an Intel CPU handles a standard call calling, actually anything handles a standard call calling convention. So what I want to look for is I just want to set a breakpoint right before I leave this function. And then I'm going to go back and I'm going to go look at those 5 parameters on the stack again. And I can see because what I'm interested in this case, looking at the documentation, is what's the RID that's going to be passed back before it goes back onto the wire. Okay? So right now this array is empty. Okay? But what we want to look at is what happens right before we break out of this function and return back to the client. Okay? So here's my return address. If I set it on the return address, chances are I'm probably going to, there's a little bit more that I have to do because I've now moved the stack pointer back to the previous function and all that. So what I want to do is just set a breakpoint right before I do that. So we're just going to pick this call right here. So I'm just going to set another breakpoint. And I'll say go, and by doing this, I'm just going to let whatever Windows is doing, I'm just going to let it run until it's ready to return from this function. Okay, so now I'll say go. All right, well here. So now we have 2 breakpoints set. The first one is our function entry. Here's our function exit. I'm just going to say go. Okay, now we hit our breakpoint. So we hit, right here it says I hit breakpoint 1, which is the one that I just set. So now I'll just do a stack trace. Just display the stack, dump out my registers. You can see that the instruction pointer, the next instruction to execute, is going to be what my breakpoint was, because we break right before we execute it. I can see what my stack pointer is. I can see what my base pointer is. So again, so going back and looking at, let's see, where's our base pointer? 91C. So here's our base pointer, looking at the stack backtrace, the previous function invoke, like I said, right at EBP plus 4 is going to be my return. So here's my five parameters now. Okay, so you can see I still have the same domain handle. This is the guy that we're looking at, right? So this is going to be our relative ID parameter. So let's just go dump the memory there. And again, I see that I've got an array that I've got a structure that the count of the values. So go back to the documentation. I've got a ulong array, right? So it's going to tell me the first parameter is going to be my count of elements in the array, and the second one's going to be the actual buffer, right? So since they're ulong, they're going to be 4 bytes each, right? So here's my pointer to the actual buffer. So let's just DD that. I know I have one element, so I only need to look at this first 4 bytes right here. So this is the RID of the count that I just looked up on this lookup names and domain call. So 1F4, 500. So that's the RID, so that's the out parameter that I was interested in. So using this technique, and if you want, I'll be happy to save off the log for this or talk you through it. I mean, we can even do it during the protocol testing if you like. We can set a breakpoint on one of the RPC calls for the search service, and we can get the call parameters and the return value before they get encrypted back onto the wire. So using this technique, you can do some protocol analysis that you wouldn't be able to do with protocols that are where that value is actually encrypted on the wire. Sometimes in the case of in domain controller traffic, it'll be encrypted and then encrypted again on the wire. You won't be able to see that first encrypted value because it's still going to be encrypted at this point in time. There are some ways if you kind of poke around and look at all the so. If you go back and look at the unassembled assembly here, all these calls, if you kind of poke around through those, you might be able to see the values if you're really wanting to get it deep into it. But most of the times I only see driver guys looking to do this. Anyways, again, the public symbols are very good. They should line up exactly with what's in the documentation for this interface. So using the documentation and a little bit of knowledge of this debugger, you can go ahead and do a more thorough analysis of the traffic on the wire. So with that, that kind of concludes my presentation. Are there any questions, or is there something you'd like me to go back over? Yes. Sure.
So the first one, I'm sorry if I missed it, was this. It was in one of your windows, it kept saying time travel position.
So because this is a time travel trace. Okay, so the question was, you saw in the debugger you'd see time travel position, and then you'd see this hex value right here. So this is the time travel tracing. What it's doing is it's recording all the calls, and it has it for a given period of time. So this is just a position inside of the file, and it's breaking on that. So it's replaying exactly what that process did. And so this is just telling me what the position is.
This is a post-mortem?
Yes. This is not live.
That's what this .run file.
Right.
Are you going to show us how to do that?
I can show you how to capture it. I can't show you how to analyze it yet because we don't give the ability publicly to do the analysis. So this is where you would work with the protocols team. But this is the same. So this is you would, in your case, what you would be doing is a live debug. So you would download the debugger to the Windows system, attach to the process that you're interested in. So in the case of certificates, search server.exe, find the module and the function that you're interested in and set a breakpoint and then do the live debug. And what I'm showing you here is in that live debug, how without having the private symbols, which give you the more detailed type information, how you can do a little analysis and use the protocol document to understand what that memory is that you're looking at.
So you're saying that we can't do what you just demonstrated?
You can. Yes, you can. So the difference is that you wouldn't be doing it post-mortem, you'd be doing it live. So live meaning you just...
No, I understand what
Yeah, right.
So it sounds to me like the ability to trace what a process is doing and go back and forth through it is extremely useful.
Mm-hmm.
It is extremely useful.
Sure.
You're saying I can't do that.
Not yet.
Okay.
No.
Not yet.
Not yet. I don't know what that team's plans are, but that is not public yet. Not at this time.
Can you make it?
I can't.
It's like really useful.
Yeah. But you can do the same thing with a live debug. So you can do the live debug, and it's the same way as this, right? What I'm trying to impress upon you is that just with a little bit of understanding of how to use this debugger, you can get around some of the limitations of, you know, I have encrypted traffic going across the wire. So sure. Okay.
It takes 4 hours to set up a test.
Mm-hmm. Sure.
Really
yeah.
The idea you have a debugger, tricks that you're keeping up
I don't think that's the. I don't think it's keeping it up our sleeve. It just may not be ready to be shipped out externally yet. So. Okay. Any other questions? All right. Well. When we're going through the test suites, if you want to actually take a look at how you might do this, and I can walk you through it, just let me know, and we'll get it all set up. All right, thanks.